friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Let's kick off the September 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports with the FIFA Best Men's Player Award. As I reported on Monday's show, the big prize, as well as several others, will be presented September 24th in London. The finalists for the Best Men's Player Award are Cristiano Ronaldo, who's won it the past 2 years and five times overall, Mohamed Salah of Liverpool in Egypt, and Luka Modric of Real Madrid and Croatia. Former Manchester United goalkeeper Peter Schmeichel believes the award should go to Modric.
People say, well, Cristiano, you know, he won the Champions League again. But people kind of forget that Luka Modric also won three times in a row. But his performances in the World Cup was just incredible. And to sort of watch him lead his team on the pitch, to not be only the technical player that we know he is, the guy that provides and make chances for other players, score goals, but to see him to be being the fighter, the one that tackles, the one that dives in, that runs until he cannot run anymore. I think his performances was fantastic, and rightly so, he got the best player in the World Cup, and I fully expect him to win this one.
Last week, Luka Modric was named Player of the Year for last season by UEFA, European football's governing body. Cristiano Ronaldo, who was Modric's Real teammate last season, and he's now joined Juventus, was second in the voting, and Mo Salah was third. Former Tottenham and Arsenal defender Saul Campbell says he's also impressed by Modric's performances during the World Cup in Russia. In particular, Campbell talks about Modric sparking Croatia to victory over England in the semi-finals.
Just the performances for Croatia, especially against England, when he had to kind of, you know, the first 20 minutes, England really had them, but then he just woke up and said, this is not me. Right, I'm going to start picking holes and moving around in the right positions and start hurting England. And the rest is history, really.
And speaking of history, former Danish footballer Peter Schmeichel is remembered as one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time. Now 54 years old, Peter will have some family pride at stake when the FIFA awards are held on September 24th in London. That's because his son, 31-year-old Kasper Schmeichel of Denmark and Leicester City, is one of three finalists for the Best FIFA Goalkeeper Award. The two others are Thibaut Courtois of Belgium and Real Madrid and Hugo Lloris of World Cup champion France and Tottenham Hotspur. Once again, here's Peter Schmeichel.
There is this idea that goalkeepers are, you know, a person separated from the team. So it's only right that there is an award like this, and no, I kind of like three names there.
Meanwhile, the three names up for the Best FIFA Women's Player Award are Ada Hegerberg of Norway and Olympique Lyon, Zenifer Marazon of Germany and Olympique Lyon, and Marta of Brazil and the Orlando Pride. Former England striker Kelly Smith is picking Hegerberg to win.
And then Hegerberg, I think she scored 31 goals. And 15 in a Champions League, that's a record. So for me, I think she should win it just of the pure fact of the amount of goals that she scored. Winning the Champions League with Lyon is a massive feat too. But all three of them have been outstanding this year.
In more football news, 19-year-old Kylian Mbappe was named the best young player at this year's World Cup after helping France win the trophy for a second time. The young striker for Paris Saint-Germain scored 4 goals at Russia 2018. In the World Cup final, Mbappe scored France's 4th goal, and in the process, he became the first teenage player to hit the back of the net in a World Cup final since then 17-year-old Pele in 1958. Now, Mbappe's mother is from Algeria and his father is from Cameroon. While Cameroon failed to qualify for this year's World Cup, many Cameroonians felt they were represented by Mbappe in Russia. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to this feature report by Moki Edwin Kinzika in Douala, Cameroon.
Music is blasting from loudspeakers at a popular bar in Makepe, a neighborhood in Cameroon's economic capital, Douala. Until last week, the bar was called Terminus. But when France beat Argentina 4-3 at the World Cup in Russia, the bar was rebaptized Mbappe in honor of the French striker Kylian Mbappe, who scored 2 spectacular goals in the game. Bar manager Marcel Lenny says he wishes Cameroon's national team had a player like Mbappe.
France are performing very well. And if you see them qualifying, it's because of Kylian Mbappe. I wish our football federation could have called him to play for us in the national team. When you look at our own national team, you see there is something missing of which Mbappe has.
Mbappe has a Cameroonian father who is his agent and an Algerian mother. He is one of 15 players on the French squad who were either born in Africa or can trace their roots back to the continent, part of which France ruled at one time as a colonial power. Mbappe became a professional player in Monaco at the age of 16, just 3 years ago. He has never lived nor played in Cameroon, but his performances attracted the attention of the Cameroon Football Federation and he was contacted to play for the national team, nicknamed the Indomitable Lions. But French coach Didier Deschamps already had keen eyes for him. Soccer analyst and former Cameroon Premier League player Gabriel Tiller says it is a great loss that Cameroon failed to get Mbappe to play for his father's homeland.
Mbappe est un joueur vraiment talentueux. Il fallait des gens comme ça pour jouer dans l'équipe camerounaise.
He says they needed Mbappe to bring Cameroon's football back to glory, but unfortunately, their local football federation neglected him. He says it is a shame that Cameroon abandoned football star Mbappe to France at a time when Central African States football has taken a downward turn due to a lack of talented players. Cameroon's national team is the African champion, but the squad was eliminated from the race to the 2018 World Cup after a 1-1 tie last year with Nigeria. Local football fans say if they had players like Kylian Mbappe, they would have performed better. Nonetheless, thousands of Cameroonian World Cup fans will be glued to their TV sets to cheer on Mbappe, who they see as a fellow countryman, playing for a nation with deep ties to Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Douala, Cameroon.
Thanks, Moki. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America! Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In more African football news, Morocco and Ajax midfielder Hakim Ziyech has won the Dutch Footballer of the Year award. The 25-year-old Ziyech was born in the Netherlands, and he was eligible to play for the national teams of the Netherlands and Morocco. After playing for Dutch national youth teams, Ziyech confirmed his choice to play for Morocco in 2015. Now, last year with Ajax, he scored 9 goals and also had 14 assists in 34 appearances. The Dutch Footballer of the Year award is given by the newspaper De Telegraaf in partnership with the Dutch Football Federation. Ajax's head coach, Erik ten Hag, had some sparkling words of praise for Ziyech, and I quote here, "Ziyech is a piece of jewelry for Dutch football." I love that, a piece of jewelry. And he continues, "I think he plays football in a nice team with lots of good footballers around him, and it runs smoothly, which gives him pleasure and motivation to achieve even more." Congratulations to Morocco and Ajax midfielder Hakim Ziyech, the Dutch Footballer of the Year. Dave Sarachin, the interim coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, has called 24 players to camp for high-profile friendly matches against Brazil and Mexico. The Americans will host 5-time World Cup champion Brazil on Friday night, September 7th, at MetLife Stadium near New York City. And then 4 days later, on September 11th, the USA will play regional rival Mexico at Nissan Stadium in the southern U.S. city of Nashville, Tennessee. Christian Pulisic, who was named U.S. Soccer's Male Athlete of the Year for 2017, will miss the friendly matches because of a leg injury. But Tim Weah, the son of Liberian President George Weah, was named to the USA team, and I think Tim will see some playing time against the Brazilians and the Mexicans. The Americans are training in the New York area this week ahead of the game against Brazil, which is expected to feature some of its top players, including Neymar and Roberto Firmino. Meanwhile, Paraguay has hired former Mexico coach Juan Carlos Osorio to lead its national football team. The 57-year-old Osorio is from Colombia. He guided Mexico at this year's World Cup in Russia, where the Mexicans were eliminated in the round of 16 by Brazil. His contract with Paraguay runs through the end of qualifying for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to tennis, 5-time U.S. Open champion Roger Federer has suffered a surprising 4th-round loss at the big tournament in New York. Joining us now with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Roger Federer made his earliest departure from the year's final Grand Slam since 2013 in a match that ended early Tuesday morning. Federer fell under the brutal heat and humidity and a relentless John Millman. Federer explained the reason for his loss in a post-match news conference and said it was so humid he couldn't get any air.
I just thought it was very hot tonight, and it was just one of those nights where I guess I felt I couldn't get air. You know, there was no circulation at all, and I don't know, for some reason I just struggled in the conditions tonight. You know, it's one of the first times it happened to me, so it's just, yeah, it's uncomfortable, and clearly just keep on sweating more and more and more as the match goes on, and, you know, you lose energy as it goes by. But, you know, John was able to, I knew I was in for a tough one, and, you know, maybe when you feel like that as well, you start missing chances, obviously, and I had those, so that was disappointing. But look, I'm just at some point also I was happy that the match was over, I guess.
The world number two dominated the unseeded Australian in the first set, but as the match went on, Federer began to look sluggish, and he racked up 76 unforced errors. Despite a change of clothes and a closed-in roof, Federer said the conditions inside Arthur Ashe Stadium proved to be too much.
Some days it's just not the day, you know, where the body can cope with it. I do believe since the roof is on that there is no air circulation in the stadium. I think just that makes it a totally different US Open, plus conditions. Maybe we're playing slower this year on top of it. And then you have soaking wet pants, soaking wet everything, and the balls are in there too. And you try to play and it's just everything gets slower, you know, as you try to hit winners. But again, look, I thought the match was tough, you know. I wish I could have led two sets to love, and then maybe the match would be different, you know, and I would find a way.
Just as the match was starting, Britain's Andy Murray sent out a tweet in what could be seen as a foreshadowing of events to come. It read, "I hit with John Millman on Arthur Ashe Court a couple of nights before the tournament started, and we had a really good practice. He was playing really well and has an unreal attitude. Millman loves these conditions. He trains in Brisbane." That last point is key. Brisbane is one of the most humid places on earth, and while Federer suffered under the oppressive humidity, at the other end of the court, Millman appeared to thrive in it. Afterwards, a fresh-sounding Millman said he felt very relaxed throughout the match.
Yeah, look, I felt very comfortable as the match went on. I can't really remember a time when I was nervous or letting the moment get the better of me. It was literally just kind of playing each point, and there wasn't a lot of... I wasn't letting my mind kind of run away with me a little bit, you know. Never once after the start, admittedly at the start, I was, you know, deer in headlights a little bit. It's a different environment. But as the match went on, I felt very comfortable in terms of... in terms of my mental state, felt very relaxed, and that obviously helped me tonight.
And Millman was asked what it was like to play against Roger Federer and what it took to beat him.
In all honesty, Roger's a hero of mine. I look up to him. I really like his team, and he's always been, you know, one of the guys in the locker rooms that's, you know, we'll always chat and very approachable. So he's a hero of mine. I don't know, I felt a little bit guilty today because he didn't have his best day, and that's for sure. I know that. I'm very aware of that he didn't have a great day in the office, and probably to beat him, I needed him to have an off day, and I needed to have a good day.
Millman advances to the quarterfinals, where he will face Novak Djokovic, who was also able to beat the heat with his win against Portugal's João Sousa in straight sets. After the match, Djokovic said he's pleased his level of playing is steadily improving.
I felt like in the first couple of rounds I was still, you know, struggling a little bit with the level. You know, wasn't that consistent. And then last match against Gasquet and also today was pretty good. So I'm really pleased with where my game is at the moment, and I'm getting into quarterfinals, you know, ready to perform well.
Also on the men's side, Marin Cilic of Croatia will face Japan's Kei Nishikori in the quarterfinals. All four men will play on Wednesday. On the women's side, it was a happy 30th birthday for Spain's Carla Suarez Navarro. On Monday, she defeated Russia's Maria Sharapova in straight sets to book her place in the quarterfinals. Japan's Naomi Osaka defeated Aryna Sabalenka of Belarus to reach her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. final. And last year's runner-up American Madison Keys eased her way into the quarters following her win against Slovakia's Dominika Sobolková in straight sets. Sunny, forecasters are saying there could be a break in temperatures towards the end of the week. So here's hoping the remaining athletes hang in there. I'll have more results tomorrow. Sunny, back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. The U.S. Open is being played at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in New York City. Billie Jean King is regarded as one of the pioneers, not just in women's tennis, but in women's sports. 45 years ago, Billie Jean King beat Bobby Riggs in the Battle of the Sexes in Houston, Texas. Among those on hand was another tennis pioneer, Donald Dell.
Well, just by happenstance, I happened to be at the match and saw it live in Houston in 1973. And it was an exciting time because going into that match, because Bobby had beaten Margaret Court so easily, everyone, I think, felt that Riggs would prevail. And as the match went on, it was very clear that Billie Jean was a lot stronger and a lot better, and Riggs was getting tired. But I think much more importantly, that in the bigger picture, you know, you often hear the phrase battle of the sexes, depending on what it is, whether it's an argument with your wife or whether it's something that you're betting with somebody. I mean, there's always that phrase, and I think the phrase is, you know, forever, battle of the sexes. I mean, it's something that a lot of people relate to and laugh about. And I think this match really set an interesting tone. And I don't say the match did it, but shortly, I believe a couple years thereafter, they came in with Title IX in collegiate. The Congress passed Title IX, which basically said that women in collegiate sports had the right to the same number of scholarships and the same funding that men did. And that was a tremendous important change for women's sports across the country. I think the Battle of the Sexes was sort of a preview of that and kind of got people thinking about that, you know, women could certainly compete and compete at another level. And, of course, you've seen what's happened now. That's sort of been traveling on into a business and corporate world. I don't mean there's a battle of the sexes, but corporately, I happened to be watching something this morning on television. I think it was CNN, and they were saying they were talking about the game changers and the women who are so impactful in corporations. They named 26 different new CEOs, all of whom were women in major companies like Pepsi, like GM, and it was a very interesting, you know, 10-minute discussion. Well, I think that's kind of a fallout, if you will, from a fun, playful, but competitive thing called Battle of the Sexes with Billie Jean and Bobby Riggs. I think they set a tone that's really still going.
You mentioned how you were at the match. Very much a spectacle. King comes onto the court kind of like Cleopatra, carried by four muscle men. Does tennis need more of that today?
Well, I think certainly that was a spectacular promotion, and I thought it was very clever. I always thought Billie Jean had a good chance, depending on the court service, because she's a wonderful volleyer. By happenstance, nothing to do with the Battle of the Sexes, I played mixed doubles with Billie Jean at Wimbledon the first 3 years she came over. And so I knew her quite well and liked her a great deal, and we were very good friends. And she was a very, very natural volleyer and a very good one, particularly in doubles. She won 10 Grand Slam titles in women's doubles, for example. And if you watch that match, I happened to watch, just by happenstance, a thing on Billie Jean's life on HBO, an hour show, and it showed her playing lots of different matches, and she was a great volleyer, particularly on her forehand volley. And she came into net against Bobby Riggs many, many times in that match. She did not stay back on the baseline and rally with him. And I think partly that was because the court was reasonably quick. It was not real fast, and it was not soft like grass. So the ball was bouncing at a pretty good height. And she attacked it very well and came in behind it a lot, if you watch that match or tape thereof. And that was one of her great strengths, was her quickness at net and her volleying ability.
Tennis pioneer Donald Dell talking about tennis great Billie Jean King. And that wraps up the September 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nashwan Kale. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, recently announced additional assistance to support achieving the goals outlined in the Bilateral Development Objectives Assistance Agreement between the U.S. and Nigerian governments, signed in 2015. $25 million will strengthen good governance by supporting state governments' efforts to bolster Nigeria's open government partnership commitments to improve transparency and fight corruption. An additional $1.5 million will support a healthier, more educated population in targeted states through the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, also known as PEPFAR, for a total of $26.5 million in additional assistance. The additional new funding brings the total U.S. government assistance provided under the five-year Development Objectives Agreement to $1.1 billion. USAID is also working with federal and state health ministries to build stronger health systems with the aim of guaranteeing equitable access to quality health care services nationwide. USAID collaborated with Nigeria's Ministries of Budget and National Planning, Health, Agriculture, Power, and Education, as well as state-level government counterparts, to structure the Bilateral Assistance Agreement, which runs through 2020. The United States believes that as the most populous country in Africa with the largest economy on the continent, Nigeria holds tremendous influence over the future of Africa, Acting Mission Director Aaron Holleran said. USAID is committed to partnering with the government and the people of Nigeria to address its development challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, VOA presents a town hall special introducing members of the Mandela Washington Fellows for Young African Leaders Initiative. The 2018 Yali Fellows pledge to continue Nelson Mandela's legacy, highlighting the Yali Fellows on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music From bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito, the African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.